Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by permanent Don't Miss Academy Award winner Patricia Arquette and Rainn Wilson in the outrageous comedy Permanent. Set in 1982, Permanent follows a hilariously awkward family struggling through major life changes and bad hair, all the while trying desperately to emerge intact together regardless of what life throws at them. Sounds like my Easter. Permanent is available now on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital HD from Magnolia Home Entertainment. Permanent, the lovely and talented Patricia Arquette from True Romance, and the slightly less lovely and probably just as talented Rainn Wilson from The Office. Enjoy the show.
I was like...
I didn't realize. I thought you were going to say something.
Oh, no. I wasn't sure if we were riffing before. Or it was like that was all we had to do. Like, you know what I mean? Like
No, that's it.
Oh, okay.
Just enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show. Yeah. Watch it. Listen to it.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hoggy and nonsense.
Hey everybody, I'm Dave.
And I'm Greg Wyszynski of ESPN. And you're in Puck Soup.
I'm gonna get this thing shortened down to like 4 seconds before the season's over. Dave here.
I just can't wait until you get like an amazing job. Like you're like you. I'm Dave Lozo.
Dave.
Representative of the 6th District in Hoboken.
And I'm here to tell you that you're in Puck Soup of districts.
Have you ever thought about running for office?
What are you, high?
No, I'm
I can barely take care of myself. You want me to be responsible for thousands of people?
But you're charismatic.
No, I'm not.
And you are power hungry. You would love to have influence over the lives of others. Wouldn't you want to? You know what was one of my favorite things ever in politics was remember when Mayor Giuliani had his own radio show on 770 here
Absolutely
in New York?
Absolutely not.
You don't remember that? And so it was.
Why would I know that?
Think of like think of the questions that we get at live shows sometimes.
Right.
And now think of that as a radio show where it's like, yes, caller, you're there. How can the mayor help you? And then it's like
there's a pothole at the corner of 7th and 43rd, and it's right up my apartment. The dog can't walk across the street anymore.
And he's just like, we had 357 gun deaths earlier this month, and I'll get to that pothole when I get a chance.
So like a show for the commissioner where people call and be like, hey, what's up, Bob in Jersey? What's the deal with goalie interference today?
Bettman Garrett had that show on XM. Doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, you're right. I remember that now.
He had the commissioner hour on XM, and I used to love that show because it was the same. It was sort of modeled on that Giuliani show, and you get people calling up, you know, being like,
there should be two pucks, you know, play with two pucks so that they got one puck over there and one puck over here, and no matter where you're sitting, you know, I paid $300 for my grandson and I to come to the game the other night. We couldn't even see the puck on that side of the ice, so two pucks would be great.
Thank you for your call.
Okay. Pucks cost money, though.
I couldn't help but notice on the game last night between the Nashville Predators and the Florida Panthers that there was an egregious goalie interference call that overturned a good goal. Your thoughts?
You don't dig too deep if you don't see anything. Remember that was the advice, and then weeks later, now it's still giant gaping hunks of fucking bullshit every night when it comes to goalie interference.
Well, they've got Coley Campbell and what I'm assuming is a 94-year-old man wearing a striped shirt falling asleep at like 11 o'clock at night in Toronto. So why should there be controversy anymore?
Even if you make the case that Victor Arvidsson interfered with Roberto Luongo in that game last night as we do the show today, then you have to take into account
a lot of things.
That Arvidsson was being pushed into Luongo by Keith Yandel's stick.
That Luongo was turning his head to look for the puck because he knew he didn't have it.
He also, I believe, the operative phrase in what you just said is he didn't have it.
He didn't have the puck anyway.
Whereas Philip Forsberg, no matter what Luongo is doing, even if Arvidsson is spinning him like a fucking top at the end of Inception.
Do people spin tops anymore?
The puck's loose behind him, so Forsberg could have just skated up and took the puck and scored.
It's insane. Like, and Luongo's reaching out because he's reaching out for Arvidsson because he knows he doesn't have the puck. He's afraid Arvidsson's going to get to the puck because he knows he doesn't have it, which causes him to be off balance, more easily spinnable. like if the call on the ice was
a goal,
no goal. Let's say it was no goal.
Okay,
I can see how that's tough to overturn. Fine, I don't agree, but there's no way that's like the catch in Buffalo in the Patriots game where Kelvin Benjamin, they overturned it, even though there was no real one way or the other. There's no real one way or the other here. You can't. But hey, it happened in Toronto, so we can't argue anymore.
Look, I'm willing to go with you on maybe if you see something on a play and you're like, oh, maybe. But
yeah,
there was, half a dozen maybes on that play where you could be like, well, I don't know. Well, I don't know. Well, I don't know. Like, once you get to that point,
mm-hmm.
like, the ruling from the league was that he deliberately stuck his stick in Luongo's glove or whatever the hell they said.
And little tiny 5'7" Victor Arvidsson caused 6'6" Roberto Luongo and his extra 40 pounds to spin that much with just one little jab of the stick, too.
Meanwhile, sure. And I'm only saying this because I had the benefit of all the replays the NHL had. He didn't have the fucking puck. The puck was behind him. It was leaving his pads. He didn't have it.
I know. But here's what I like to picture, though. I like to picture, like, there's like an old man, an old referee man in a glass case, and then the call comes in and they break the case, and he runs around the hockey ops war room with his whistle, blowing his whistle, making signals. He doesn't know what's going on because he's completely senile. And then he just says, it's no goal.
I've always envisioned it now that the NHL has invited ex-referees to be part of the process, that it's kind of like Iron Chef, where Coley Campbell turns to the back of the room and three referees rise from the floor, and you have Iron Ref Don Koharski, and he's got like a donut in his hand. You have Iron Ref Rob Schick, and he's got a funny mustache. Then you have Iron Ref, who'd be the other one?
Be Carey Fraser, like hairspraying his hair with Aquanet.
What would be the other one? Paul Stewart, and he takes a fighting pose kind of thing or whatever.
Paul Stewart a scrapper? He was a big guy.
Yeah, he was a scrapper. So, yeah, that's how I picture it. And they're like, who would be perfect to blow this call? I know, Don Koharski. Come on down.
How would you blow this call?
I challenge you, Iron Ref Don Koharski.
I've watched the review, and there's like 12 things that can go either way. Overturn it.
He fell. Have another donut, you fat pig.
No, we don't use that. The have a donut thing doesn't really apply to this situation, mm-hmm. but I love the creativity. Mm-hmm. We're going to go with it's absolutely 100% indisputable. It was interference.
So goalie interference is still fucked. And
it's going to fuck someone in
the
playoffs.
And it's fucked to the point where now not only does a former PGA champion tweet at the NHL.
That was the best part about last night.
Not only does Jack Bauer himself, Kiefer Sutherland, tweet at the NHL, who I don't even think is a Predators fan.
I think he's a Bruins guy.
He's just watching the game, and he's like, this is horseshit.
He's like, what are we doing? And fucking, once you lose Carrie Underwood.
Carrie Underwood. Now, obviously, it should be said that there is a certain, bias that she has. She's a Predators fan. I believe her husband plays for the team.
Even Dennis K. Morgan didn't think that was a good
thing. The thing I loved about Carrie Underwood last night was not only that she'd be like, y'all got to fix this NHL, but then she followed up with, that play was poop emoji.
she dropped the poop. Did she like CC the NHL Twitter account?
She went after the NHL twice.
Waiting all day for Tuesday night. Poop emojis out. We're going to fight.
I do find it to be a problem, though, that now whenever Carrie Underwood bitches about the league, and I'm sorry I said bitches because it's a woman involved, but complains about the league, someone has to make the Jesus Take the Wheel joke, because that's her big song.
She has a song called Jesus Take the Wheel?
Yeah, like when your life's all out of control, sometimes you look up to the sky and say, Jesus, take the wheel.
So is it like commentary on self-driving cars? Is that what the song is?
Jesus, Jesus, take the wheel. I waited all week for Sunday night.
Jesus, take the wheel. Google car's gonna get you killed.
Listen, while we're singing, we might as well do a torch song to the Sedin twins.
A what?
Goodbye to the Sedins.
Oh, the twins. I think it was this is a DeVito Schwarzenegger bit.
And it seems to me your hockey life was like a Daniel in the wind.
Never winning a Stanley Cup.
I would have liked to known you, but I couldn't tell you apart.
You played too late on the West Coast for me to stay up late.
I have to give the Sedins credit because
mm-hmm.
It could have gotten pretty weird this summer. Like, the Canucks could have been like, we want to move on. We don't want to pay the money. They could have been like, we want 2 years, Borka Borka. Mm-hmm. And And so that it could have been one of those situations where it's a Brodeur with the Blues or Madonna with the Red Wings, where all of a sudden my prediction, long prediction, was that the Sedins end up in Calgary playing for Brian Burke.
I drafted him. I'll take him out too.
and that would have been painful. Yeah.
Got to get Daniel to do some more spearing in the balls. He's too soft.
Truculence, pugnacity, sweet acidity. Lingonberry juice.
Sweet acidity. Oh, I think like Homer Simpson, like sweet ass.
Back into the left. No, I'm happy that they took the onus to say we're done, you know, and not prolong
sad.
The agony.
It's kind of sad, though.
In the sense that what you wanted a longer goodbye.
If the Canucks weren't such dog shit, I think they come back. Like they're probably just like, I don't want to do this again. I don't want to, you know, lug around whatever dummy they're going to put on our wing that's not going to be that good. Like,
right, and then also play fewer minutes because they're giving all the minutes to Hovart and Besser.
They're still contributing. They're not what they used to be, but they're still fine. They're not $7 million players. But like, if you wanted to, you could bring them back for like $4 million a piece and then have them be like depth players. But like, they're so bad. Like, why would they do it?
But why would they do that?
Yeah.
I mean, $4 million apiece.
Well, I mean, Zdeno Chara's coming back for peanuts. Yeah, because that team's good.
He can win a cup, right?
Right, because that's what I'm saying. The Canucks being bad screws them.
The tragedy is that Vancouver's a bad team.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I prefer this. I prefer the tidy sort of we played for one franchise and they're ending our run with one franchise to them going someplace else and having the fire still burning inside of them. It would have been weird to see the Sedins anywhere but Vancouver.
You can still picture Brodeur in that Blues jersey.
God damn.
It's so weird.
Why?
He felt like he could still play. You know, the ego, man. Yeah. Sedins don't really have egos.
Modano, at least it was a situation. Well, it wasn't really a situation. Like, that guy should have known.
Modano was the same thing. He was just didn't want to be told it was over.
But the difference is that Brodeur is like, I got boned by my team because they didn't allow me to go out on my own terms. Modano was like, Modano had the single greatest like storybook ending of any situation where he's like skating around in Minnesota in a North Stars jersey.
Oh, his last game was in Minnesota.
Yeah, and then he like win the shootout or something that game too, or some such. Like there was some epic finale to his time in Dallas that would have been the perfect like finish, like roll credits moment, and then he decided to go to Detroit instead.
But that was like back when Detroit was good. Like he was like, I can get a cup here.
Yeah.
And then they were like, well, listen, you're never going to play for us in the playoffs.
You're basically David Legwand.
You can't skate anymore.
I guess there is a certain sense of like, I wish the Sedins could play for a cup again kind of deal. But
yeah, like they weren't since 2012. They really weren't. 2011. Jesus, 2011.
Yeah.
God, it was 7 years ago. And man.
Yeah. The time marches on, my friend.
We're all slowly dying.
Remember back in the day when Brad Marchand was a irredeemable a miscreant who was just punching Swedish guys in the face with no repercussions during the Stanley Cup final?
And Tim Thomas was interfering, cross-checking the Sedins in the chest as they were going for Luke Cox.
Now Brad Marchand is a redeemable miscreant who is now just cross-checking guys in the face without any repercussions.
All right, you ready? We said enough nice things about the Sedins. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
I find it odd that they are such a slam dunk for the Hall of Fame. I'm not saying they shouldn't get in.
Well,
but if you look at their numbers,
mm-hmm.
it's not really – it's good. It's definitely – like to me, like if there was just one of them who had those stats, we wouldn't be talking about them so quickly for the Hall of Fame.
No.
But there's two of them that look alike, so it's like that's awesome. Put them in at the same time.
I just think that they're a Hall of Fame – they're in the Hall of Fame as a duo if they wanted it. And Henrik Sedin told me in the past he doesn't want that to be the case. They want to go in individually.
But they're going to go in the same year when they go in. They're not going to have like Daniel 1 year and then Henrik 3 years later. They're going to do it the same year.
So in my mind, they go in as an entry. They're like 1 and 1A at a horse race.
Like two plaques?
But you're
one
like,
plaque, two faces on it?
Like I feel like exactly. I think your description is actually kind of problematic because you can't – they have to be an entry. You can't look at them and be like they both get in because as individuals they're not Hall of Famers.
Yeah, but like that's kind of – it's for the best player, not the two – like that'd be like saying like I don't even know what the equivalent would be where like just two guys played together forever and like together – like Hall and Oates for instance are both Hall of Famers whether they play together or not. But like imagine if they played together but they had like 70% of their stats and you were just like, well, they're Hall and Oates. It sounds just like a band from the 80s. We got to put them in together.
But that's
like,
just
that's
it.
Not
like,
the Hall of Fame.
I I understand what you're saying.
Duos, teams, it's individuals.
I understand what you're saying. And I do find it ironic that, like, we're talking about them as a unit, yet, like, neither one of them would have ever gotten a Sniff of the Heart trophy were it not for the fact that the other one was injured during those years.
One guy missed, like, 20 games a year, and they were like...
Henrik won the year that Daniel only played a few, like 60 or 50 games or something like that.
Weird how the team situation affected who won the MVP that year. And nobody seemed to mind.
If they go in on the same plaque, I'm for it. If they go in as individuals, I'm not really for it.
I mean, because they really don't have any playoff bona fides.
If Henrik gets in and Daniel doesn't, I'm really for it.
See, like that would be funny if, like, they're just like, well, you played 30 fewer games and you had a few less points, so I'm sorry you're not going to be in.
That fucking call that day, it's like, the Hockey Hall of Fame welcomes Henrik Sedin. Okay, folks, that's all.
No, it's going to be like, we welcome Daniel Sedin and Henrik Zetterberg. Congratulations to both Swedes.
They go in on the same plaque. I'm fine with it. You know, someone mentioned this the other day on Twitter about the Sedins, and I want to bring it up. Like, I also give them so much credit for dealing with all the horse shit they had to deal with for the last 15 or 20 years, whatever it's been. Like, not only just creepy twin stuff, you know, but also the Sedin sisters shit. And having the lead analyst for the National Hockey League's U.S. television rights holder call them Thelma and Louise.
Mike Milbury, see?
Yeah.
Yeah, see?
Yeah, Thelma and Louise, see?
They're girls, see?
Yeah. See? Yeah.
They're not tough, see?
Right. Hey, what's a great pop culture example I can use where they're not actually, you know, related and also they're women? Thelma and Louise. Look at those two.
Not for nothing. I don't know if I've ever actually seen Thelma and Louise, but don't they, like, fuck some shit up in that movie before they, like, take care of themselves?
Yeah, that was another problem with Milbury's asshole-ish misogyny was that he basically picked Ripley from Aliens.
Right. Yeah.
And said, look at these two wimperoos, huh? They're actually Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis blowing up gas stations and fucking Brad Pitt.
This Brock Besser's soft. He's like Atomic Blonde. Wait, so you mean, like, he's done, like, hundreds of murders and, like, saved people's lives? Like, that sounds pretty badass, actually. You know? Just keep picking. Oh, look at Wonder Woman over here. Oh, you mean, like, the strongest woman in the world who is completely
Yeah, Brock
a hero?
Best is a real Black Widow.
Oh, God. I hate NBC.
But I give the Sedins credit for, like, enduring all that shit.
But, like, I feel like the mood in Vancouver changed once they got to the Cup Final, because before that... Like, you would always mention them in the same breath as, like, Joe Thornton. Like, terrible in the playoffs, never gets it done, soft and all that sort of stuff.
Soft.
And then they got to the Game 7. They got abused for six games by Brad Marchand and Tim Thomas and everybody.
And that's the other thing, too.
And they would have won the Cup. I still say they would have won the Cup that year if they weren't down to their, like, 14th defenseman by Game 7. Because they lost Aaron Rome, they lost Dan Hamhuis, they lost... I want to say they lost Andrew Alberts, which I know isn't really good, but they were so decimated by injury in that series that they still made it seven games.
That's the other thing, too. Like, whenever Crosby would get hit with the Cindy Crosby shit and the Sedins would get the Sedin sisters, like, all these guys do is grind in the corner, like, the entire career. Mm-hmm. And, like, yeah, too bad you can't catch them because they're real good and elusive, but it's not as if they're just, like, floating. The Sedins don't fucking float. You know, Sid never floated. It's, goddamn, it's just the worst. But... You know, it's all in the past now.
It's U.S. hockey.
We all appreciate the Sedins for what they were, which is creepy. No, they're not creepy. Yeah, they kind of were.
I mean, they're not, like, creepy, like, as people or anything, but, like, it does seem weird that, like, they could never not play on the same line together. Like, I wonder how that hamstrings you as a coach, where, like, yeah, these two work together so amazingly well, so it makes sense to put them together, but, like, you know, like...
The line's not going well, you can't split them up.
Yeah, like,
really.
you can't do, like, a Crosby here, Malkin here, Kessel here thing with those guys, because they have to play together.
Right, like, they're two of the best players in the team, but only together.
They're unable... Right, so, like, so you look at their career numbers again, going back to the Hall of Fame, imagine if, like, they had to play with, like... Imagine, like, having to put, like, Daniel on Kessler's line and, like, Henrik Sedin with just Alex Burrows. Like, what would they have done? Would they have been a better team with lesser numbers?
That's a great point.
Are, like, the Sedins, in fact, selfish, Greg, for having to stay together all
completely.
The time?
Completely. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like, imagine if, like, Ovechkin had to constantly play with Malkin all the time and be like, oh, Russians can't play with other players.
That was the thing. Like, I mean, Ovechkin and Backstrom played together forever, then they didn't, and then they had to go and play together again. So maybe they're the package. They might be the package deal. Like, how many games has Ovechkin played with Backstrom, and how many of those goals are Backstrom's responsibility?
Do you want to just leap ahead to the part now where you say Backstrom sucks in the playoffs and nobody mentions it?
Oh, I know, he's that's fucking terrible in the playoffs and no one ever mentions it. And Ovechkin basically wins the Conn Smythe every first round. But by the way, outside chance the Capitals and Penguins play in round one based on where they are in the standings right now.
So
there's a chance Pittsburgh could drop to the first wild card.
I don't think they will.
There is a chance. I'm saying there's a chance.
I mean, there's a chance. It is kind of bunched up.
Mm-hmm.
See, I don't know the remaining schedules for the teams. That's my problem.
Well, Mikey.
Penguins.
We're not going through that again.
Dog. Loss. That's a win, dog. Blue Jackets. That's not a real team. What's a Blue Jacket?
John Tortorella. I was talking to Parcells the other day.
I was talking to Bill about Torts.
Yeah.
He said he's an enormously talented coach.
So, farewell to the Sedins. I would put them on this. Two Swedes, one plaque. And put them in the Hall of Fame.
Two Seeds, One Plaque is like a video I think I saw on PornTube once.
PornTube?
Is that a thing? PornTube? Pornhub? Pornhub is
Pornhub.
Pornhub is what it is.
YouPorn.
YouPorn.
RedTube.
There's no PornTube?
I'm assuming there is a PornTube.
I have a business idea for Greg right now. What do you say we start a website called PornTube, but it's just hockey highlights?
Pornhub is basically Uber. And then what's the other one that's really popular
Lyft?
Where people go? No, the other porn site. The next one, XTube, let's say, is Lyft.
Pornhub's the best one, right?
Yeah.
Because it has – you always see like their press releases come out.
They have
like,
market dominance. They're the ones who talk about how many people after Game 7 in the final went and jerked off.
Yeah.
Because their team lost.
Searches for sad Stanley Cup masturbation – reached an all-time high on Pornhub today.
Nashville lost in Game 6 and then got spanking. It's always that.
The Sedins did nothing in Game 7, and the search for Swede-on-Swede S&M.
My favorite ever, though, is that like they do those things where it's like a game will go to overtime in the playoffs, and it's like in the gap between the third period and overtime. The city cranked it more than any other city in America.
That's actually smart because you want to relax. You don't want to be all stressed out when the overtime starts.
You don't want it to be a tension convention.
Rub one out real quick. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if I could. If my team was in a playoff overtime, I don't know if I could necessarily concentrate.
I was thinking of the old Damon Wayans bit where he's talking about how his son was like 13 or 14 and just started like jerking off. And like whenever something went wrong in the house, like he would always go to his room. He'd be like, spaghetti again. I'll be right back. He would go to his room and close the door. Like, that's what hockey fans got to start doing between periods.
My point before is that there are those porn sites that are sort of, I guess, PornTube would be one of them, where you're walking down the street and then you see one of those Uber cars and it's like an Uber sign, a Lyft sign, and then it's like a bug with a taxi hat on. And you're like, what the fuck is that? And there's so many – like, I don't understand – I trust Uber. I know what Uber is.
Right.
I have it on my phone. I know what Lyft is. I have that on my phone. Who has like – wheel bug or fucking tax E, but it's an E with a fucking line over it or some shit. Like, what the fuck? Who's just using these?
Maybe they're just super cheap. I remember switching to Lyft and realizing how much cheaper Lyft was.
It's a lot cheaper.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
But yeah, it's like one car. Like, and that's why cabbies hate all these motherfuckers, because like it's a one car. It's like enough stickers where it's more stickers than a crunchy liberal has on their hybrid. It's like all these stickers of these car services,
yeah.
And half of them probably went defunct within 2 months of their release.
There is a like a parking spot right out in front of my place. Not even a parking spot. It's like an illegal spot. But like that's where all of the Lyft Uber drivers come in. Sometimes you leave your place and there's like a guy sitting in his car reading a newspaper and you see like 19 different stickers for like Lyft, Uber, Drive Balls, Road Dog, all
road
this stuff.
Dog.
And you're just like, and he always looks at you for a second like, no, I'm okay, thanks.
Burp, burp. Yeah, I'm your Uber. I didn't order an Uber. I meant your Lyft. I didn't order Lyft. Yeah, I'm your Road Balls. I didn't order Road Balls. I'm your tax E, and there's a line over the E. Listen, there's a lot of brands out there, and you have to figure out which ones to trust, but this is the brand that we trust for buying sports tickets. It's SeatGeek.
Taxi. You're the accountant who drives me around and does my taxes, right? Yeah, it's almost April 15th, man. We got to get this done. Let's
go. No, I ordered. It's Taxi. It's TXI. It's an app.
It's actually a Texas Instruments calculator car.
And the driver rates boobless and shows you the calculator upside down. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event, whether you're searching for a last-minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. It could be anywhere with just a few taps. I can instantly find seats. Might be using some SeatGeek in the near future to buy some Lord and Run the Jewels tickets in Newark at the Prudential Center.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people aren't really high on Run the Jewels right now because Killer Mike said a bunch of stuff about the NRA in support of them. But, like, it's Killer Mike, and he's just going to be Killer Mike. And that's
didn't he explain why he said it? I didn't watch the
video. It doesn't matter. I mean, like, it's Killer Mike. He's going to be what he is. Doesn't change the music. Just like Roseanne being whatever she is doesn't change the show. Like, watch it, don't watch it. I don't care. Like, but willing it to not exist because she's a maniac who believes in the Pizzagate stuff.
Yeah, I don't know if Roseanne and Killer Mike's non entertainment opinions are on the same
level. I just mean in the sense that they're both really sexy. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. They save you time. They save you money by searching multiple ticket sites, compare prices, and find amazing deals. They get you the most bang for your buck because they grade every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed. So you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with what?
I know the word. Starts with a C, ends with an E.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
There's an F in the middle.
Confluence. Confidence. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every ticket type, from sports to concerts to comedy to the theater. Best of all, listeners to this very podcast can get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Download the SeatGeek app today. Enter the promo code SOUP, that spells soup. That's promo code SOUP for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And we thank everybody who sends us those delightful tweets saying that they used this deal to buy their tickets. It impresses our sponsor. It impresses us.
Mm-hmm.
And we love that you do it.
Thinking about doing it for St. Louis. Might be going to St. Louis for the baseball trip this year.
Mm.
But we were all ready to book our flights this morning, and my one idiot friend, who I won't name on this podcast,
mm-hmm.
who listens to this podcast,
mm-hmm.
suddenly doesn't want to book yet. So looked up on SeatGeek, found some good cards tickets in the outfield. It's expensive. St. Louis ain't cheap for a baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
But with SeatGeek,
yes,
I can save $20 off of my purchase.
You could do that. Also, when you're in St. Louis, you should definitely go to the Anheuser Brewery.
Yeah, I kind of have to, right?
It's a fun tour, and they give you beer afterwards that's not, like, available. It's, like, better Budweiser.
Wait, really?
I know that's a bit of an oxymoron, but...
Interesting.
Yeah, and then also I went to the Bigfoot Monster Truck Museum.
Museum? That was not the word I thought was going to end.
Dave, I'm nothing but cultured.
This 1974 Monster Truck model actually begets the 1972 model. All right.
This was one of Renoir's later works. He called it Gravedigger.
It actually led to the Dave Matthews song Gravedigger. When you dig his grave,
you get to sit inside of one of the wheels of the Bigfoot. It's kind of cool.
Like the tire. Yeah, yeah.
Like, you can take pictures in it and stuff. It's pretty cool.
We did the Milwaukee trip. We did the Miller Brewery. It's pretty cool. I don't remember there being like special secret Miller beer though, but they made us watch a video. It was like when you go to like that Kodak thing in like Disney when they play the I Can See You're True. It was like that, but for like beer. I'm sitting there for like 15 minutes.
Wait,
like,
you went in a boat through water and saw dinosaurs and shit?
No, it wasn't that good.
Okay.
Dinosaurs aren't.
What did you think of the Masters banning Dilly Dilly from the gallery?
Is it real? Was that like a real report?
I think it was a real report.
But like, what are they going to do? Like, is it going to be like one of those things we have to tell on your fellow gallery member? Oh, this guy was like how loud does it have to be?
I guess what they're worried about is the
Dilly Dilly.
Pavlovian response from men and women in the gallery. Galley or gallery?
Gallery. Galley is a thing on a ship.
Okay. It's not as if we were like, go Tiger, make the shot or whatever. Like, that's fine. But like, when you go Dilly Dilly, the Pavlovian response is everybody going Dilly Dilly in back of you.
I disagree. It's all bad. Idiots who yell get in the hole after fucking tee shots on a par five, they should be in prison next to the Dilly Dilly.
But what about people in the cheap part of the gallery who, when Tiger is about to make his putt, are like, shoot,
yeah.
Shoot.
And so every sport has it.
Yeah.
Golf has people that yell get in the hole. Hockey has shoot. Baseball has people that boo whenever someone throws over to first base.
Right.
Basketball, what's the equivalent in basketball? There has to be one, right? Like, timeouts. People get mad when you call 7 timeouts in the last 45 seconds. I don't know. But, like, yeah.
I think they're shooting basketball, too. Like, guys that are outside the arc, like, in three-point range, where, like, they have the ball. And you're like, yeah!
Put it up. Shoot it up. It's probably shoot. There probably are guys that yell shoot at basketball games.
Oh, no, no. You know what the thing is in basketball? Oh, but this is it by fucking far. A guy drives to the hoop. Traveling! Traveling! No. Steps!
They don't yell it. What's fun to do is you look to the sidelines behind the bench and look for somebody doing the hand motion.
They do the hand thing, you're right.
I love looking for that. The second I see someone kind of travel in a basketball game, I go right up to the crowd and I find that one, like, 74-year-old man who's just like,
man.
Fundamentally, that Euro step is actually a third step. I'm not going to do that in my gym.
I got to admit, though, like, half the plays I see in basketball, I think it's all traveling. And I get really excited when I actually see a traveling call. It's like seeing obstruction in the NHL. Like, obstruction happens on every single play.
Right.
When you actually see it called, you're like, oh, that's quaint.
Oh, look at that. I guess that guy had, like, the over on power plays tonight in Vegas. That's good to know.
Well, as you know, Dave, the rules in hockey have changed a lot over the years.
They have.
Everything in hockey has changed a lot over the years. But there's been one constant.
What is it?
That'd be Stan Fischler, our guest today on Puck Soup.
Stan Fischler is a poor man's... I don't know. What would be the equivalent?
He's a poor man's red fish.
He's a rich man's Don Cherry.
All right. Here's Stan. Stan Fischler, you are a hockey legend. How many years in the business for you?
For money, I got paid for my first gig in 1954 when I got out of college. I went to Brooklyn College. And my first gig was with the Rangers in publicity.
Hmm.
We did not call it public relations.
What'd you call it?
Publicity.
Publicity.
Yeah. We were. My boss, Herb Gorin, was a former writer for the New York Sun, which was an evening paper. He was a baseball writer and a hockey writer and a Brooklyn guy like me. And it was a wonderful job because I was getting paid. The last time I paid to see a hockey game was 1954.
Wow.
It's funny you should say that because Larry Brooks' origin story was in publicity too. He was the Devils media relations guy. I only know that because he was the guy who had to go on the air and talk about the Kaharsky thing when he was working for the team back in 88.
I was there.
That was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But so the humble beginnings.
I got paid for that job. And I loved it, and the team didn't make the playoffs. We had a tough year. And, of course, in those days, you didn't stay with the team after the season. You were on furlough. And that was okay with me because I wanted to come back. I loved it. And a couple of things I didn't like because my boss, Frank Boucher, who was the manager, got canned. And they brought in Phil Watson as the coach and Muzz became the GM. So I was unhappy about that, but I was, you know, looking forward to coming back. And I got an offer to go to work for the New York Journal American, which was Hearst's evening flagship paper. And to do a column, but I still didn't want to leave hockey. Mm. And I sat down with my boss, and he said, "You got to be crazy not to take this offer. You can still do hockey on the side," which I wound up doing for the Hockey News, and that enabled me to go to the newspaper job, do other things. So it turned out to be a smart move that I listened to Herbie.
Where did the nickname The Maven come from? I don't know the origin story of that.
Well, it came from herring. And the way it came from herring was in around 1971, there was a very popular herring called Vita herring, V-I-T-A.
Like Vita. The fish?
Yeah,
oh.
Fish. What other kinds of herring?
Well, Vita herring sounds like a herring.
Yeah, Vita herring sounds like it's a it helps you. It gives you a pep.
It's right. It's like Campbell's soup. It was Vita herring.
Oh, gotcha. All right.
And V-I-T-A, and they had a very clever radio commercial with an old vaudeville actor named what the heck was it? Al Kelly. His real name was Kalish. He was a Jewish guy from Williamsburg. In fact, his niece was in my class at Eastern District High School. I should have dated her, but I didn't. But
well, how come you didn't? What was the issue?
Gwendolyn Schaefer got in between us.
As she's known to
her. Gwendolyn.
And so what happened was he did this commercial where it was a Yiddish dialect, and he was the herring maven. That was the whole deal. He was the herring maven, and it changed every week. He had something different. He was hilarious. You know, you didn't have to like herring to listen to this guy. So at that time, there was a magazine called Hockey Illustrated, and a buddy of mine named Al Goldfarb asked me to do a column, which I said I would do. And he says, why don't you give yourself a title? I said, well, I love this herring maven. Why don't you call me the hockey maven? He says, you're it. And that's how it... by the way, I hated herring. I still hate herring. The two things I hate are herring and gefilte fish.
The Twilight Zone twist of the maven story.
Wow. So hockey back then, hockey now. What's better? What was the better game? Because everyone says now all the players today are so much better than they were back then, but...
Well, it was like comparing Cadillacs with tangerines. First of all, nobody wore a helmet. You didn't need a program when it was the six-team league. We knew everybody.
Yeah.
We not only knew everybody, we knew what town they came from. A guy like Fernie Flamin, Dysart, Saskatchewan, the Bentleys, the Lyle, Saskatchewan. We knew everything about these guys. And we knew what they looked like. That's number one. Everybody had a wooden stick that wasn't curved. It was a flat stick. Nobody took a slap shot, a real slap shot, until 1951 when Boom Boom Geoffrion came along. And when he took a slap shot, we thought this was like somebody from Mars came down. What is this? What is he doing? You know? And it was altogether different. And the thing about it is that we loved it. We loved it. And now we love it for a different reason. But the whole point is, was it exciting? Mm-hmm. And it was exciting. Is it exciting now? Yeah, of course it's exciting. I was at the Islander game last night. I mean, what Barzal did at the end to save the Islanders from another dreadful three-goal lead.
Yeah.
But it was completely different, completely different. And as I said, the body day, it was meaner.
Yeah,
it was meaner. And the high sticking, which was very frequent, the high sticking was nasty. And of course, if Gordie Howe was playing now, he'd be in jail for all the damage that he did. And I saw a lot of damage. I mean, I thought Ronnie Murphy of the Rangers was going to get killed, or got killed, when Bernie Geoffrion poleaxed him. In fact, I was vice president of Ranger Fan Club at the time, and I sent a very bitter letter to President Clarence Campbell.
Yeah.
And saying that, how can you penalize Ron Murphy, who nearly got killed, and you're penalizing Murphy as well as Geoffrion? And he didn't answer me. So I wrote a second letter, and I said, I represent 502 paid members of the Rangers fan club. You have a right. You're obliged to answer me. And he was a Rhodes Scholar, Campbell. He was also a former NHL referee, and he was also a hero in World War II. He was in battle. No kidding around battle. He's a tough guy. But he wrote me back. Two pages. In Rhodes Scholarese. And if you took all the words and put them together, he basically told me to forget about it.
See, this sounds like Twitter before Twitter existed.
Yeah.
Right? Like somebody would yell at someone they didn't like.
Right.
They would ignore them. You yell at them again.
Yeah.
And then they would respond and just be like, leave me alone.
Did you, you mentioned Clarence Campbell. What are your feelings on Bettman as a commissioner? We've had 25 years now, the man. You've obviously seen different presidents before him, before we had a commissioner. What do you think about him with regard to the job he's done?
Well, there's two ways for me to look at Bettman. One is on a personal basis, and personally, we got off to a very, very bad start. My relationship with him was awful, because when he came along. You may remember that in 1994-95, which was half a season, the Devils just barely made the playoffs. And what happened was John McMullen was being offered a sweetheart deal to move the team to Nashville.
Right, yeah.
And like a lot of people who were with the team, we were worried about the Devils go bye-bye. We ain't going to move to Nashville. And I had Bettman on during the playoffs, and it was a very nasty interview because he was talking about, well, New York City doesn't need three teams just like it didn't need three baseball teams. And he was unhappy about it. And I remember when they won the cup, he was still not too pleased with it. But over the years, we kind of got close, very close, as a matter of fact. On the business side, he's seen the league grow to now 31 teams. He got serious about the hooking and this and that and whatever they and it's got it become a fast game, and now we got a lot of stars. And the bottom line is that it's very exciting. And they're going to have a team in Seattle, and these guys are going to pay $650 million.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, yeah.
And crazy.
Right?
It's crazy
did
stuff.
You, did it take you a while to accept him as – I mean, I imagine every other president that they've had in the league during your time was a hockey guy. You know, was it difficult to accept him as a basketball executive coming into the league and being the head of the NHL?
Absolutely. At the beginning, it really stuck in my craw because what they were trying to do was first get David Stern. They wanted the best of the best from the NBA. Stern wasn't leaving. His second in command, they went after also. Bettman was the third choice, and the second guy turned it down. I forgot his name. And then, of course, Bettman took it. But I almost went to work for him.
Oh, yeah.
And
Doing what?
Well, my cousin Ira was very close to Stern. And, of course, Stern and Bettman were tight. And my cousin Ira said, you know, I can get Bettman to interview you for a job. And he went to Stern, and Stern called Bettman, and Bettman interviewed me. And what he was going to do then, he was going to have three vice presidents. He's going to have a vice president of PR. Then he was going to have a vice president on the business side. And then there was going to be the third VP, which was going to be me, which was untitled. Really?
Really?
Yeah. They didn't know what the heck they wanted to do with me. And in the meantime, you know, my wife wanted me to take the job. My older guy, Ben, wanted me to take the job. But the bottom line was my gut didn't want me to take the job.
Yeah. Right.
And I wound up not taking the job. And
it all worked out, I guess.
Yeah.
You've had an okay run.
Yeah, it's been a pretty good run.
Yeah.
So, I thought you were going to go next.
No, I was more curious about the whole past current hockey and maybe like interviewing players. Was it different back then as opposed to now where you're in front of the locker one-on-one and there's cameras? And
Tangerines and Cadillacs again.
It was very
simple. Here's what happened. The end of the game is at the Old Garden. Okay, I'm talking about...
'68.
I'm talking about the 40s and 50s. Yeah. And I guess early 60s. Early 60s too. The game is over. You go into the dressing room. Unless it's the Canadians... And Toe Blake is pissed off at what happened, whatever. So you go into the dressing room, and there are 17 guys sitting around on their, you know, in front of their locker. And you went over to any guy you wanted to go over. Yeah. Now, occasionally, there was a guy who didn't want to be interviewed. So what he would do is that he would hide in the shower.
Right.
But how long can you stay in the shower before you wilt, you see? So eventually he came out. So there were, you could interview anybody you wanted as long as you wanted. Mm-hmm. And that's the way it was. And there was no press room. Press room. So the coach would be available. And occasionally, I remember... When Bill Jennings was president of the Rangers and Phil Goyette was speared by Ted Green of the Bruins, and he nearly killed him. It was two Rangers nearly got killed by Spears. Jeez. One was Red Sullivan when he was with the Rangers by Doug Harvey. And this was later. This was Goyette from Ted Green. And I remember I went into, I was with the Journal, and I was furious, you know. I mean, I was, you know, you're covering the Rangers. I'm rooting for the Rangers. Hated the Bruins. We always hated the Bruins. I'm not kidding. For a lot of good reasons. I remember when they were neck and neck for the playoffs, and Milt Schmidt broke the ankle of Edgar Laprade, who was our best center, about 53. So he's gone in the last couple of weeks, and they get in. It was always hate the Bruins. So Goyette is in the hospital. He didn't know what was going to happen to him. And there's Bill Jennings, the president. And Jennings was like me. He was a very passionate guy. And I go over to him. I was the only guy there who went over to him. And I said, Bill, what are you going to do about this? At Goyette, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. What are you going to do about Green? He said, Green is wild animal. And what do you do with a wild animal? Wild animal, you put a bounty on his head, and the league has to put a bounty on Ted Green. I'm going to call up Campbell tomorrow. And that was my headline. That was my headline the next day. I had a scoop.
Hockey was
had
the best.
A scoop. That is a good scoop. Then I called up Green the next day, and you know the two words he said that began with F and began with Y, and I was on the blacklist of the Bruins.
Because you wrote the story.
Well, I wrote the story, and not only that, later on when I did Derek Sanderson's book, I've Got to Be Me, I had to go into the Bruins room to set up the interview with Derek, and the press agent, Herb Rolby, would not let me in the room.
Wow.
I said, why? I want to talk to Sanders. He said, I can't let you in. I said, why? He said, because I can't vouch for your safety.
Oh, shit.
That's what he said. That's what he said. Wow. Because of Green and the other guys. God. So it was different. It was different. Now the PR guys handle the whole thing. You know, it's and you're lucky if four guys are around.
Do you think it hurts?
Guys.
Do you think it hurts having all the hockey players today?
What?
Do you think it hurts to have all the hockey players today have media training and they're polished and they know what to say and what not to say? Is it better for the game if players are all just unfiltered like maybe they used to be back in the day?
Of course it was. It was because they were natural. It was interesting because when the Rangers had a wonderful team. They won the Cup in 40. They finished first in 42. And then all their best players go into the Army. I mean, every team had players go into the armed forces, but the Rangers had more than any of the teams. And so when the war ended, they had a very tough time. During the war, they got beat one game 15-0 by Detroit. It was incredible. But my point was the Rangers were carried on the radio, and at the end of the game, Ward Wilson, who was the color commentator, he would go into the dressing room and interview these guys, even when they lost, you know, and these guys were really, they were very human, they were very natural about it. It was who knew from agents? They didn't have agents.
Right,
they didn't have, they were themselves, and that was it. They were getting, I think the highest paid Ranger at that time would have been probably Charlie Raina, the goalie. And Charlie, if he was getting $15,000, he was getting a lot.
No. Yeah, I was thinking a lot about you in the last year because of the centennial celebration. And I've seen you pipe up a couple times and say that when we praise modern players within the context of the modern game, like how do you compare that with players that I think have been somewhat diminished and ignored when it comes to the top 100 players of all time? How do you feel about that, the sort of recency bias or overpraise of more recent players versus some of the guys that might have been amazing in their day, but because of, you know, the way that life works and media works, we forget about them.
Well, to a certain extent, I resent it, but I also understand it. Now, there was a famous radio show called Baron Munchausen, not connected with the movie.
The
guy who played it had a standard line that he used every show. It was, "Was you there, Charlie? Were you there, Charlie?" Now, I can't talk about Eddie Shore because I never saw this guy play. I can't talk about Howie Morenz. I can talk about the guys that I saw.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So if I started watching hockey in 1939, I can talk about guys who weren't, you know, who today don't know what the heck I'm talking about. They know who Sugar Jim Henry was. They don't know who Sugar Jim Henry was, so on and so forth. And the point is, one of the greatest centers of all time was on the Stanley Cup winning Rangers in 28. He was on the Stanley Cup Rangers in 1933. He coached them to the Cup in 1940, Frank Boucher. Mm-hmm. His banner should be up.
Yeah. It's not.
The Rangers are pretty slow about that sort of stuff. Huh? The Rangers are really slow when it comes to putting banners up.
I don't know how the mechanics work, but the point is, none of these guys, well, I didn't even see Boucher play, but I mean, I've read enough about him, and he was my boss, and I did an oral history with him, and I know that he was the star in 28. He was the star in 33. He played on one of the greatest lines in history, centering Bill and Bun Cook. And he probably saved the guy's life because one of the great stick fights, I think it was 31, it was Bill Cook and Nels Crutchfield, who was a rookie on the Canadiens.
That's a good name.
Crutchfield, right?
Nels Crutchfield. That's up to
And he was one of the rare guys who came out of college. I think he went to McGill. Anyhow, he and Bill Cook had this stick fight, and Crutchfield hit Cook so hard on the head, he was knocked out. He was a tough guy, Bill Cook, and he was out flat, you see.
Stick fight.
It looked like he was dead. Right? And Bun, his brother, was coming across to kill Crutchfield, and Boucher saw what was going to be happening, what Bun was going to do, and he stuck his foot out and he tripped him before he could kill Crutchfield. So, you know, so he saved this guy's life. But the point is that I understand these guys, you know, they write about, they're writing about the guys they know, so it ain't the end of the world.
Right.
But I like how you say he was going over there to kill him. You don't mean that metaphorically back then. He might have actually killed him.
Right.
Like, that was hockey.
Well, yeah, because in those days it was still a frontier game.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I remember when I was going to the games, there were only three really prominent referees. There was Bill Chadwick, New York guy, who remarkably, and people can't believe this, he had only one eye. Did you know that?
One eye? So, like, he was a lot.
He lost an eye playing hockey.
Yeah.
He was a good player. He would have wound up on the Rangers.
No.
He lost an eye. So, Bill Chadwick is one eye. He's in the Hall of Fame. Great referee. Then there was King Clancy, who was a great star with the Maple Leafs. Well, Chadwick was interesting because he never wanted to be known as favoring the Rangers because he's from New York, so he leaned the other way against doing any favors for the Rangers. King Clancy came out of the Gas House Gang Maple Leafs, and they were always fighting, so he liked fights. He liked to let them fight.
Right.
In fact, one of the greatest fights of all time, Blackjack Stewart against Johnny Mariucci, Stewart, Detroit.
These names.
Such great names.
Now we have guys named Miko.
Blackjack.
Blackjack. God.
Can you imagine? Can you? Glenn Sunmore, in his book, Old Time Hockey, said this fight lasted 20 minutes. It couldn't have lasted 20 minutes. But everybody I know who was there said it was 15 minutes because it was on the ice. Then they used to sit next to each other in the penalty box. So these guys ain't going to sit next to each other. So they're fighting in the penalty box.
Of course
then
they are.
Then they're going down the corridor fighting. Then they come back on the ice fighting.
It's like the end of Blazing Saddles.
Yeah, as I say, it just keeps going on and on until they get out to the parking lot and they get out to Penn Station.
Fighting, the last time I checked the numbers, fighting is going to be, there's going to be less than 20% of games this season with a fight, which is the lowest total in recorded history, I think, for the NHL. Do you miss it?
Of course I missed it. I was raised on fights. Yeah. What I resented were the phony fights, you know, two goons saying, let's go, because that's the only way they can earn dough. I'm talking about legit fights. Legit fights in the old days was, first of all, you only had one referee.
Right.
And second of all, like I said, it was a frontier thing. So if one guy got creamed illegally, he's going to get even.
Also, stick fights happened.
Yeah, well, one of the greatest stick fight that I know of, seriously, was not in the NHL. It was in the Western League.
Uh-huh.
And it was two guys who came up to the NHL. It was Jack Evans of the Rangers. Tex Evans was with Saskatoon. And Larry Zeidel, who was one of the toughest defensemen, Jewish defensemen, who was with Edmonton. So Zeidel was with the Red Wings farm team, and Jack Evans with Rangers farm team, and they had this stick fight in Edmonton, and they broke the sticks over each other's head, and then with the jagged ends of the sticks, they went after each other.
Like the Joker's henchmen? They're just breaking pool cues and just going at it?
I have a picture of Zeidel that Larry gave me. It was in the Edmonton Journal the next day, because he's wearing a suit and a tie now, looking great, and it had all the marks from the stick fight, all, you know, the stitches here, there, and everywhere on his head, and it was a great caption. They were describing the fight and this, and at the bottom it said, and Larry said to our photographer, you should see the other guy.
My God, man.
Oh, my God. All right, so as we wind it down, Stan, your career has been incredible. What would you say, I mean, if you had to pick one, what your favorite moment was? A favorite moment you were able to be part of, something you were able to write maybe or accomplish maybe or just be part of the atmosphere for something?
Well, this is you'll find it unusual. First of all, I was still a fan. I was a Ranger fan.
Are you still a fan now, though, or no?
Of course I'm a fan. Every game I go to, it's like Finian's Rainbow. There's a song from Finian's Rainbow that says everything about me at a hockey game. And the song was, when I'm not near the girl I love the girl I'm near. So if I'm doing an Islander game, I'm rooting for the Islanders. I'm doing the Rangers because I want to go down to the room where they're happy.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So I'm a Ranger fan. It's the 53-54 season. I had been a Leaf fan for 10 years, from 42 to 52. This is now 53-54. And my favorite player was Max Bentley of the Leafs, Hall of Famer, the best. And Max played with his brother Doug from 39 to the November 47. And this is the greatest hockey trade of all time. The Maple Leafs traded five guys, a whole forward line.
Whoa.
That was so good it had a name. Forward lines didn't have names unless they were good. And this was the Flying Forts. Gay Stewart, Bud Poile, Gus Bodner, all from Fort William, Ontario, now Thunder Bay, where the Stars come from. And two defensemen, Ernie Dickens and Bob Golden. Bob Golden was this short of the Hall of Fame, the first real puck-barking defenseman. Ernie Dickens was on the 42 cup-winning Leafs. Five guys for Max Bentley.
Wow.
And you know what happened?
What?
Toronto with Bentley won the cup in 47-48, 48-49, and 50-51. He won three cups. And the poor Blackhawks, with these five guys, won garnish nothing. But what's my point? My point is Max was separated from Doug.
Yeah, like a Sedin.
The father, Bill, said they never should have done the thing, whatever, whatever. But so now Max's career is ending, and the Rangers pick him up, 53-54. He teaches Camille Henry how to work the power play. And Max is at one point, and Camille's at the other. Camille wins the Calder Trophy as only playing on the power play.
Whoa!
24 goals as a power play specialist.
Like a mark.
Only that year. Only after that he.
Yeah.
So anyhow, Max is, you know, toward the end, and the Rangers, Frank Boucher is desperately trying to get Doug to come and play with Max again. Doug is the player coach of the Saskatoon team, the Quakers. That's the same tune team that Doug Jack Evans was, the stick fight. So he's pleading with Doug, and Doug is saying, no, 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 no. And Max wants him to come. And finally, in January 54, where, by the way, the Rangers are neck and neck with the Bruins for the coveted fourth place to make the playoffs, finally Doug agrees to come. It's a hell of a story. We're all excited. And he had to fly from Saskatoon to St. Paul, from St. Paul to Chicago, from Chicago to New York. And he comes to the Garden at 4 in the afternoon. He hasn't worked out with the team or anything. And now they put – and, of course, we're all excited. And it was the only time I ever sat in the first row of the side balcony – which was a phenomenal seat. First two rows of the side balcony were fantastic. Third row on, you couldn't see the boards because of the way they built that stupid thing. Anyhow, so it was the only time I ever sat in the first row, and I bought my friend Harvey, who went to high school with me. He never went to a hockey game. Never went to a hockey. He was at Brooklyn College with me. And he's a basketball guy. It was his first hockey game. He didn't know what the hell was going on, but, you know. And so now the game unfolds, and it was unbelievable. The Bentleys with Edgar Laprade, who they also came, the three of them, it was like the puck was attached to an invisible string. Yeah. Unbelievable goals. It was like old times. What's my point? Why was it so great? Well, the Rangers won 8-3.
Oh, yeah.
The lousy Bruins, we hated them still. And I told you we were neck and neck with them.
Yeah.
And Doug, Max, with Edgar, all the goals between them. And at the end of the game, it was the only time at the end of a hockey game I was weeping.
Oh.
I was crying.
Because how beautiful it was?
Exactly.
Wow.
Did you bet the Bruins?
Did
you bet the Bruins? I thought maybe you bet the Bruins and you
It was just such a beautiful thing to see these guys. I was crying. The next day, I pick up the paper, and a guy interviewed Max Bentley after the game. Tim Moriarty interviewed Max Bentley, and Max is in the dressing room crying.
Wow.
He says, "Why are you crying, Max?" He says, "I'm crying from happiness."
Oh.
Because he's back with Doug.
Oh.
And I'm telling you guys this story, I'm almost crying because of what that whole scene, the game, they're so great together. And to me, that was the best moment I ever had.
It's what hockey can do. It's like a great pop song. It's like a perfect moment in a movie. It's like those little moments where it all comes together and you're just like, you're struck emotionally. And maybe you can't explain it to other people who don't quite understand it, but it's what it does.
Well, somebody else interviewed Doug on the other side of the dressing room. It might have been Dave Anderson. I'm not sure. Anyhow, he's interviewing Doug, and the guy says, "What's going on here? Why is Max crying?" He says, "He's so happy that we're doing these things together." He says, I couldn't believe what we were going to do. We never practiced. You know, he came in, he sits down, he puts on a uniform. He said, "I couldn't believe what we were doing." It was like, he said, he's crying because it's like old times.
Oh. Well, now we're going to cry. Stan, thank you so much for everything you've given us as hockey fans. Dave and I, in full disclosure, watch you while we grew up.
Yeah. Oh, I want to tell you real quick before you go, my favorite Stan story was nothing you did on TV. It was the 2003 Stanley Cup Final, Devils Ducks Game 7. And me and a friend were in the parking lot tailgating. And suddenly my friend goes, "I think that's Stan over there." And I'm looking around for like a camera, a microphone. I don't see anything. He's like, "No, the other way." And you were riding your bike around the parking lot. And all the fans that saw you ride were just waving. It was like a parade for Stan. And you were the only person there. And it was just everybody loving seeing you. It was just so weird as like a fan who only saw you on TV to see you in real life on a bike. People were trying to give you beers. They were like, "Stan, Stan."
And I still have that bike.
Do you really?
If it wasn't raining, I would have taken the bike down here.
That's awesome.
I was going to take the bike there because I love riding around the city.
So how would you get the bike to Jersey? You just put it on your car and then?
I don't remember how it was, but it was easy because We had a bike rack on the car. Jeez. But that was a wonderful series because it went seven.
Yeah.
You ride it to Giant Stadium, then you ride it over the pedestrian bridge
from the Giant Stadium, to the arena. It was like, there's Stan Ryder. I was like, Stan has the greatest job in the world.
Stan, you're the absolute best for doing this dumb podcast, and we thank you for all of the work you've given and time you've given to this this game of hockey. You're the best, man.
Thanks, you mean Stan. This wasn't the rehearsal?
All right, time to record. Was that good?
Thank you, Stan. Our thanks to Stan Fischler. Our thanks to MSG Network. You can watch MSG Network this week for a bunch of stuff regarding Stan and his life in the biz. As they say it.
The biz.
Stan is, of course, a man that has a very stylish and stately bit of facial hair, unlike you, who looks practically unkempt today. Mm-hmm.
It's great. I haven't shaved in like a week. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Someone asked me about like growing a playoff beard, and I had to inform them once again that I have gaps on my face. Did you know that? I have gaps from my sideburn to maybe like right here, I would say about an inch and a half under the ear. Well, so I could do like a... like a Andrew Sullivan type beard where it's just like real bushy in the front but it doesn't actually connect anywhere.
You should do that.
I don't want to do that.
You should absolutely maybe, do that. And shave your head too so it's like more emphasized.
That's what I mean. I can grow what I would affectionately refer to as the medieval executioner beard.
Yes. You'd be like the guy in Ragnarok who's he's like the assistant to my lady.
Right, yeah, to beautiful
Cate Blanchett.
Hela would indicate she's a giant lizard. But Stan has a beautiful beard. You have an okay beard. I can't grow a beard. But you know what? For an enviable beard and healthy feeling skin underneath, opt for beard care from Just for Men, the number one beard experts. You know, soften up and smooth out and beard on. With 25 years of men's facial hair experience, Just for Men knows beards. And they've got a full line of supremely fine products to prove it, including face and beard wash, beard conditioner, beard oil, and beard balm.
Beard oil.
Beard oil. Oh, beard oil.
Oh, beard oil. Oh. I want you to meet me sister, Mary Potatoes. I think you two would make a fine couple.
Ah, oh, laddie, you don't want to fuck with beard oil. Runs the numbers for all the South Side.
Meanwhile, the face and beard wash helps prevent beard itch, unclogs pores, calms and moisturizes in deep conditions. Meanwhile, the beard oil is light and non-greasy and smooths and softens without clogging pores.
Top of the morning to you, officer. Beard oil here. Here to give you your payoff.
Your beard oil is definitely your Colin Farrell. Let's just be honest, right?
I'm a seven psychopath. Oh, no, wait. That's Sam Rockwell. Or is Colin Farrell the psychopath? No, Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, man, I'm a seventh psychopath. I'm going to do a little dance now. That's also my Owen Wilson. My Owen Wilson is my Sam Rockwell. I'm on the moon. I've got a twin on the moon.
You killed your dog. Why would you kill your dog? My man, your dog is dead. He's a psychopath.
The beard balm offers superior hydration, fights itch and dry, flaky skin, and helps prevent ingrown hairs. All using soothing oatmeal, aloe, chamomile, and jojoba oil. Someone said it's not jojoba, but I couldn't remember what the actual pronunciation is, so I'll go with jojoba this time until someone corrects me.
Everybody knows what that means.
So kiss your average beard goodbye and usher in your softest, smoothest, bestest beard and skin underneath.
Usher.
Visit jfmbestbeard.com. Use the promo code bestbeard25 to get 25% off your purchase. JFMBestBeard.com, promo code BestBeard25 to get 25% off your purchase. Put your best beard forward with Just for Men. Speaking of beards, Ready Player One came out recently. As of this podcast, I've yet to see it. I'm seeing it soon. You chastised me for making time to go see a movie about white people who dive into virtual reality to then become the Iron Giant whilst I waited months to see Black Panther.
Wait, the plot of Ready Player One is the winner...
our producer's phone just made a little giggly noise, like it was a tie, like a baby was on it.
It was like I have a studio audience. All
But you, so wait, yeah. The plot of Ready Player One is that
to become the Iron Giant. That's how you win. Is become the Iron Giant.
You go into virtual reality. You can play as different characters. That's the whole point of it.
Wait, and are all the characters Spielberg based? Nostalgic
no,
characters?
They're characters from all across pop culture, except for like Star Wars, which is hilarious. George, do you mind if I?
No, I don't think you should use them. Actually,
well, what if I could just use the Millennium?
No. I think it's fine if it's not in your movie.
But George, you don't even have the rights anymore.
Maybe I do, maybe I don't.
Finally, he made a good decision involving Star Wars.
What about for Indiana Jones 5? Indiana Jones is going after, oh, I don't know, the original Yoda puppet. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Let's name the bad guy Terror Jabbo.
Terror Jabbo. What if the whole plot is like that movie Fanboys, where he has to break into the Lucasfilm ranch and steal the original Yoda puppet, but the Nazis are after him too?
I saw that Wikipedia page with all the references. I'm like, I'm never going to watch. There's certain movies like The Post.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wanted to go see it before the Oscars, but I knew I wasn't going to. Oh. I'll absolutely watch it when it's on HBO. I will never watch Ready Player One.
I hate The Post. Is same. All those newspaper references in The Post. You know, oh, where are you from? I'm from Cincinnati. Oh, so you're a bit of the Cincinnati Inquirer. Like, all these newspaper references all over the place.
We're running out of time, Spicune, to get the job done.
My thermometer broke. Well, there's some San Jose Mercury news. I hate it. It's just self-referential.
I have an inside source in Seattle who's an intelligencer that can give me information. I'm all out of weird newspaper names.
Oh, I just finished the marathon. I set a Bergen record. That's a little Jersey deep cut for you. All right, listen. In honor of Ready Player One coming out, Lozo and I figured we'd give you our top five Spielberg movies. This is a bit that we stole from Sean Fennessy's podcast on The Ringer, where they did their top five as well. But I was inspired by it. It was a good conversation.
Inspired.
Bill Simmons came on and said, my favorite Spielberg movie is Blue Chips. They're like, but he didn't do Blue Chips. But whatever, it's fucking great.
He actually read the script for Teen Wolf before Teen Wolf became a movie, so I think he should get some credit for that too.
But he didn't, like, he had nothing to do with Blue Chips. If he didn't have anything to do with Blue Chips, how is Anthony Hardaway so good in that movie?
It's like there's like a little filly in your Bill Simmons. Your movie.
Number five for me in the top five Spielberg movies is Catch Me If You Can. I think Catch Me If You Can is like a perfect sort of light caper movie. Yeah. It's the most charismatic DiCaprio's ever been and will ever be. And I just really loved it. Hanks is great in it. Yeah. Plot's great in it. I love it because it's kind of a change up. Like, Spielberg's never made a movie close to that type of film. Maybe The Terminal was supposed to sort of be sort of that, but I hated The Terminal.
Yeah.
And, you know, 1941 was a disaster. Like, he'll never make a good comedy. But as far as it being a light, funny movie that's also a bit of a caper and it's got great music and it's got great performances, I think I put that just ahead of Close Encounters for my number five.
Your mother left me. She's gone. The government's coming from my house. Two mice fall in a bucket of cream.
Yeah, your son owes $1.4 million to the...
If the FBI agent in real life actually had a Boston accent, fine. But like, if Tom Hanks can't do one, you shouldn't make him do one for 2 hours.
It's also, though, a flick that I think suffers from. And it's funny because I think the best ending to any movie he's ever done is Close Encounters. Like, the entire movie sort of rests on the end of that movie.
I forget how that ends.
Where they go to the place in Devil's Tower and the aliens actually, like, show up.
They play,
like,
the music and stuff. But do they get on the ship?
Yeah, he gets on the ship. But, like, that entire, like, 20-minute sequence is, like, the best part of that flick. Catch Me If You Can is sort of like latter-day Spielberg, where almost every movie had a shitty ending. Minority Report, War of the Worlds, all this shit. Shitty endings.
That's all right. So that's your five.
That's my number five, yeah.
All right. My number five, despite what I said while we were waiting to come in here, because I realized I had Jaws on here twice and didn't notice. Didn't notice until just right now.
Number five, Jaws. Number four, Jaws. Number three, Jaws 3D.
I typed six movies into my notes and I had Jaws there twice and didn't notice it until an hour later. But number five is E.T. Because, like, that was my sort of, like, Close Encounters, I never got into it as a kid. I don't know if it was, like, too heavy for me.
It's got some real slow parts to it.
But, like, E.T. was, like, you know, like, you're a kid and, like, you know, how cool would it be to have, like, an alien friend? And, like, you know, the story's good. The government comes in. It's anti-government. Gotta love that.
Yeah.
Peter Coyote's in the movie. Gotta love Peter Coyote.
And then also...
the bikes.
Introduced the world to Drew Barrymore. And it also was the template on which all the other 1980s and early 90s movies were built, like Mac and Me, Little Monsters with Howie Mandel, all these inferior copies of the E.T. formula of you find a fantastic creature in your suburban house and become best friends with it.
That really is how movies work.
Yep.
But make one good one, Mm-hmm. Like think about it. They made Fast and the Furious. Then they took the kid from not the kid, but the guy from Breaking Bad and put him.
Yeah,
in Charlie.
Fucking yeah. What's his face?
Aaron Paul.
Yeah, Paul. Yeah.
Like they made that car movie. There's another one too. But like, yeah, that's just how it is. But E.T. Right. Like, E.T. Like I feel like E.T. If you're 23 right now and watch it, it doesn't hold up for you because it's.
I watched. I showed it to Vivian, who's 7, and she liked it. I didn't show her the whole thing. We kind of caught it, unfortunately, right where E.T.'s like, they find him in that gully, and he's like fucking gray. So I'm like, okay, here's what happened. I had to fill you in on a lot of details here about how we got to this part. But then she liked it, and she liked the bikes and everything too. So I think for kids it works, but I understand how it might seem hokey now a little bit.
Right.
But yeah, it's number 4 for me. So that's your 4. I'll just get that out of the way that I think it's still a magical flick, and seeing it through the eyes of my child has certainly opened my eyes to how potent its slur remains.
So like she didn't know that like E.T. was basically dying there because of the heart light and the lack of the connection.
Turn on your heart light. I'm like,
let it shine where it is. But there's a lot of Batman environmental.
But what is he? I'm like, oh, he's an alien. And then but what's
let it be a happy glow for all the world to see.
What's happened to the boy? I'm just like, all right.
My 4 is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Woof.
How fucking dare you woof my Raiders of the Lost
Ark? I'm woofing that because I don't know how it fucking ended up number 4 on your list.
Because it's a spoiler. Spielberg. Yeah. Oh, you're saying it should be higher. Well, that's fair. Spielberg has a lot of great movies. There's a lot of difference in tone and style and content in all the movies. Mm-hmm. And Raiders was like the first cool like adventure movie I remember seeing as a kid. Mm-hmm. Good comedy in it. The whole story behind him shooting the guy with the sword.
You honestly don't have to defend Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It sounds like you woofed. A woof triggers my defense mechanism.
You need to defend the other 3 fucking movies ahead of it.
Oh, no problem.
But not the one you just picked. Number 3 for me is Jurassic Park, which I think is just a perfect summer popcorn entertainment movie. It is a movie that, like, revisiting it when it was re-released a couple of years ago, under the name Jurassic World. No, I'm kidding. When it was released a couple of years ago.
It was called Jurassic Park, A New Hope. No, A New Hope was the original one.
It was...
The
Jurassic Awakens. The Dinosaurs Awaken. It just holds up, man. It holds up because the CGI is still pretty good and the practical effects with the raptors and stuff are still great. And it's one of those flicks like Star Wars where you go back and watch it, you're like... How many of these fucking moments have been like completely woven into pop culture now? You know, Clever Girl and
what's Clever Girl?
You know, when he's about to shoot the raptor and then the other raptor's head comes out of the woods,
yeah,
and he realizes that they set a trap for him, the hunter guy.
Oh.
He's like,
oh,
Clever Girl, and you didn't say the magic word, and like all the Newman shit in the movie, and obviously all the fucking Goldblum stuff, and like.
Samuel L. Jackson needs to swear more for it to be a better movie, I think. Samuel L. Jackson's the best at cursing. He doesn't curse once the whole movie.
He does not. He does not. It's fucking great and works on every level and it's my number 3.
Number 3, Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, fuck. I forgot about that. Make that number 5.
Jesus. This guy sprung this on me when he got here today, and he's like, we should do the top 5 movies.
Yeah, it's number 5 for me. Although I have to say that there are, like, the first 20 minutes of that movie are the best thing he's ever done. But then there's some parts of that movie that are also sort of meandering.
Well, I mean, they are meandering.
Mm-hmm. They are meandering
through the German countryside. Mm-hmm. It's good. It's a really good movie. It's the best war movie maybe ever made.
Probably.
So I'm going to go with that as number 3.
Yeah, that's my number 5 now. Number 2 is Jaws.
Yeah, that's my 2. So I mean, the same 2.
Perfect in every way. It's funny. Like I was thinking about like what impact that movie would have had, because neither of us were really alive. I think in 75.
No,
surprisingly for me, I was not alive in
75. Close, but no.
Like, can you imagine that movie coming out? People don't know how they did the shark, and like going to the beach that summer.
Right.
Like seeing your kids going in the water after seeing like kids get munched by a fucking mechanical shark in that movie.
Yeah, don't show Vivian that movie.
No. She won't take a fucking bath if I show her that movie. It's like let alone go in the water.
It's bad enough now. Whenever she sees a well, she's gonna be freaked out because of you. Don't ruin the summer for her too, man. Oh Jesus.
It's awesome. So that was your number 2 as well.
I'm curious as to what your number 1 is.
Why would you be curious? It's Raiders of the Lost Ark. I kind of mentioned that before.
Oh, I forgot you bumped out the other
Absolutely.
One. What did you bump out? Or you bumped out whatever your 5 was.
Catch Me If You Can. Yeah. Raiders is I mean, words can't describe how great it is. Every single moment in that movie, every single segment of that movie, there isn't a fucking false note in the entire movie. The end is awesome with the Nazis melting their faces off and shit. Mm. Karen Allen's great. Harrison Ford's never more charismatic. A monkey eats a date and dies. That's great, too. The Well of Souls, the snakes. Fucking everything in that movie works.
There's meandering.
And it redefines. It comes close to Star Wars insofar as, like,
oh boy,
the overall entertainment of it. From start to finish.
Here we go.
But Raiders is without question the best movie he's ever done. Never to be matched.
See, I think everyone thinks my number one is going to be Jurassic Park.
Hold on. So you've done – it's not going to be Jurassic Park. You just gave that away.
Yeah.
You've done Jaws. You've done Raiders.
Jaws, E.T., Raiders.
You've done E.T. You've done Private Ryan. So your number one is not Close Encounters. You said it's not going to be that. So your number one is going to be either Schindler's List or Minority Report.
Nope.
Oh, what is it?
Munich.
Munich?
Munich kicks fucking ass. That movie is fantastic.
Hmm.
Eric Bana's brilliant. His whole journey from the beginning to the end of that movie and everything that happens and how they sort of set it with the idea with 9/11 happening right around 4 years earlier. Spielberg's best movie. It's not even close.
Even with the
mechanical dinosaurs. Yeah, no
even with
shark.
You know the sex scene where he's thinking back to the slaughter of his friends.
Right. That's the journey. See, I was thinking about this the other day. Have you seen the TV show Barry yet on HBO?
Not yet.
There's something weird today because prestige TV has broken everyone's brains where they feel like comedies now, half-hour comedies. Characters have to go on these fucking journeys of, like, discovery, and we have to, like, explore human psyche and all this shit. Just make me laugh for 30 minutes. I don't care about Barry's internal stuff, but in a movie like Munich, a two-hour, you know, drama, you want that arc. You want that development and how he deals with the scene where they try to blow up the guy and, like, the daughter comes back. Like, that's fucking great. That's a great fucking movie.
It's a really good – I'd venture to say it wouldn't be in my top 10.
Wow.
But I think it's really good. And I don't know how it could possibly be better than Raiders. Wait, so that means Jurassic Park's not in your top five?
Yeah.
But you love Jurassic Park.
Do I?
Don't you, though?
Not really.
Why?
It's fine.
Huh.
It's an action movie. It's okay.
All right. Well, if you want to send us your top five Spielberg movies, let it be known that you probably won't have a character count to do so. But you can try, and you can hit us at Puck Soup Podcast on Twitter with your top five Spielberg movies.
I hate how fucking unfunny Barry is. Like, I just... Like, the funniest TV shows of the last, like, 20 years are Seinfeld, It's Always Sunny, and Veep. And all those shows have characters where you don't care if they grow or change or anything. It's just jokes for 30 minutes.
And I
miss that.
So do you blame Louis for that? Like was Louis the one who changed the game and made every comedian have to create their dramatic comedy, introspective, artsy-fartsy shit?
But like Louis wasn't always like that. Like, he had a couple episodes, the one where he goes to find his dad in Boston and, like, he gets on a boat at the end. Like, I remember watching that and being like, what the fuck was this?
There was an entire segment of, like, meeting a guy in an elevator. Like, there was a lot of artistic, junior league Woody Allen shit that happened in that.
But, like, that artistic stuff, like, I felt like he always wanted you to kind of laugh at, like, the scenario. Or, like,
right.
I don't know. Like, again, Barry is, like, a well-written show and I get it. But, like, all the insider, like, laughing at actors stuff, like.
See, that's the part that makes me worry. I haven't seen it yet. I imagine it's going to be, like, Point blank, except he's an actor.
It's very much it's not though. Like it kind of is.
You're saying it should be.
But Gross Point Blank is sort of the same thing. He's a hitman and he wants to get out of the game or whatever. But like Gross Point Blank is actually there's jokes. Like no one knows how to do dark comedy anymore, man. Mm. Like In Bruges is a
dark comedy
that's funny every 5 minutes.
Well, wasn't Three Billboards supposed to be a dark comedy?
It's fucking dark. That's for sure. I fucking blacked out with anger 20 minutes in.
Speaking of dark comedy, let's talk about the NHL awards real quick. I know. I'm sorry.
Number one, my MVP is goaltender interference. It's been the story of the year. It's changed the outcome of games.
I released my NHL awards predictions of what I think will be nominated, who I think will be nominated, and maybe what. I don't know. Maybe like a fucking Cthulhu will be nominated. Who does to say? But like... Norris Trophy is interesting because I think it's had been Doughty and I think it's going to be Klingberg, but I hope it's Subban. Like Subban should win the Norris.
I haven't thought about the Norris. I don't really have any.
Yeah, it's of an interesting field only because Subban has this amazing thing where he has an impressive point total. He's starting a ridiculous majority of his shifts in the defensive zone, and he's been dragging around Alexei Emelin all year. Like, he's got a chance at it. But he's sort of like, you know how like every analytics guy is like rallying around the fucking tomfoolery of McDavid because it's fun to show the numbers and show the work and say this is why this guy should win and buck the popular trends. Like, I wish they would channel that energy for Subban because he's the one who needs the boost right now.
Yeah, it's not going to be clean
to get over Hedman. Hedman's the guy who's going to win it, but it should be Subban.
I fear the Doughty people. The Doughty people found a way to steal one from Erik Karlsson. They can steal one from Victor.
But, and the irony is, like, he actually is plays this season's deserving of it. The one, the Karlsson one, was a fucking joke.
That was like,
hey, his turn this year.
Big boy hockey.
Yeah, big boy hockey, they say on October 1st, and then lo and behold, he wins the award a year later. So I hope Subban gets it. The Selke is the same way. I feel like Bergeron's going to win it, even though he might not have the work rate that he should have this year.
Dumbest award.
But like Couturier should win it. Couturier put up a bunch of fucking great numbers and played great defensively.
You know what's funny about Couturier is he's having his career year offensively, and like the two things I'm going to think about this year are Sidney Crosby and John Tavares turning him fucking inside out for goals.
Yeah.
You know, like I know it's just two plays out of like 82 games. But.
Do you know what I find curious about Couturier? So many U's in the name. like maybe like three or four more U's than one would need.
There's no I. Oh, there is an I.
There's an I, Couturier.
It's right at the end.
Calder, Barzal, my question to you is, do you think Besser and McAvoy make the top three despite missing most of the season? Well, I mean, not most of the season, most of the last few months, I should say.
Well, Besser...
That's a tough one, right? I think he's still leading in goals for rookies as we speak.
That's what I mean. Like, he'll be
McAvoy
there.
Will get in like lickety split, but I wonder about the other one.
Like, who else would it be, though? Like, who's... It's not going to be Nico. It's not going to be Nolan.
It could be Nico, recency bias. Clayton Keller.
Nico doesn't have the points.
That'd be Besser and McAvoy.
Yeah.
Vezina, Pekka's got it. I think there's a case to be made for Gibson. I think also, though, I would say I had Gibson in my top three for who I think is going to be the finalist. Only a scant 2 days later, I'd revise that to say it's going to be Pekka, Vasilevsky, and Fleury. I bet Fleury gets in.
Oh, Fleury hasn't played enough games.
But you remember it's the GMs, though. And like all the GMs back east would be like, good for Marc-Andre. Here's my vote.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, right?
No, the GMs can't be that bad, can they?
Oh, can they?
He's not even going to reach 50 games.
I heard one of the GMs.
Oh, boy.
This is a true story. Uh-huh. Once traded Martin Irat for Philip Forsberg.
Boy, I do. I love tweeting that as often as possible just to get JP to reply to me on Twitter.
I should say traded Philip Forsberg for Martin Irat.
Actually, you know what? He also built two President's Trophy winning teams.
Greg. That's right. He certainly did.
Hey, JP.
Coach of the Year. Fuck you, anybody saying it shouldn't be Gallant. I say that to Ryan Lambert with love. Like, fucking build your fucking case for Bruce Cassidy all you want, and then you can tell me how a team with the Pastrnak, Marchand, Bergeron line, and Chara, and McAvoy, and Krejci, and Kukarask should somehow in any way be ahead of a guy who walked in a room, saw a bunch of people with "Hi, my name is" fucking stickers in their chest, and built a 100-point team out of it.
Yeah.
You are fucking insane if you think that he shouldn't win in a walk.
Yeah, that one's easy.
Okay.
That one's really easy. By the way, Ryan Spooner has like 16 points in 18 games since the Bruins traded him. Just want to point that out.
I knew that would happen for him with the Rangers.
I mean, he was producing more than Rick Nash was before he traded him. He wasn't producing at this level.
I think that makes him an MVP candidate. That, which brings us to the heart. Did we miss one? Did I get them all? Selke, Calder, Adams. Yeah.
Who's your Lady Bing?
Oh, that's an easy one. William Karlsson's going to win it because they want to. The writers will want to reward William Karlsson. He's got 43 goals now and like 12 penalty minutes, so he's the perfect recipe for winning the Lady Bing.
And he's a Swede, right? So
yeah, he's got to be polite,
gentlemanly.
Like I hate you. Here's your lingonberry juice, friend.
Although a gentlemanly person would not have done what he did to Martin Jones the other night.
That's right.
That was rude and uncalled for. Mm-hmm. That's fucking great. Cool.
I love the fact that he passed Brian Bradley for the most goals for a guy on an expansion team because it makes me think of those early Lightning teams. It was like Brian Bradley and then it was a pre-Poopa team.
Yeah, Darren Poopa wasn't there.
Yeah, right. Pre-Poopa. Like Pat Jablonski or something was the goalie, I want to say. But it was back in the day when like Roman Hamrlik was drafted and then we'd post like a minus 90 for the Lightning and it was the best.
And there were like hockey men, capital H, capital N. They were like, maybe he's not a winner. Yeah, that's probably what it is.
Any thoughts on the heart? I mean, like, I feel like we've said all we need to say about this McDavid bullshit.
If you're not voting for Taylor Hall at this point, you're just throwing away your vote.
I'm here for your McKinnon love. I really am. I still think that what he was able to accomplish this year for an Avalanche team that wasn't going to be any good is remarkable.
Hall has basically done everything McKinnon's done except for, like, he's 3 points behind him with three more games played. But, like, McKinnon has nothing over there, right? Yeah. He's got nothing over there. Hall has even less. Keith Kincaid in his 9-13 is carrying the Devils. He has Nico. There's a 40-point gap between him and the next closest guy. There's one guy on the team with more than 20 goals besides Taylor Hall.
I know the analytic response is that the games now matter just as much as the games in October, but they don't.
They don't, no.
When you're looking at the standings every day and seeing teams around you winning and knowing that you've got to be able to perform in order to keep your team fucking alive. That doesn't happen in October unless you're, you know, the Arizona Coyotes and you know that your season could be over in October. The fact that Taylor Hall has put together the streak he's put together in the last, like, two or three weeks for the Devils to win them games and probably put them over the top for a playoff spot, I just don't know how you fucking ignore that. And I know that it gets expelled away as recency bias, but you have to value – again, like you said this the other day when we were talking about this online, like you have to value that performance in leading a team to the playoffs more mm-hmm. than you value a guy putting up points in garbage time, like McDavid's been doing it for the last 2 months.
Oh, you're talking about McDavid. I don't even think about McDavid in this debate.
But you're going to have to because he's going to be a finalist.
Don't you tell me what I have to
fucking it's going to be not. Taylor Hall, McKinnon, and McDavid. Because the thing about McDavid is that there are so many other candidates that are going to be siphoning votes. Like, you've got Camp Drew, and you've got Camp Kopitar, and you've got Camp fucking Marchand, which is a really shitty camp where you get hit in the face all the time.
It's a camp where the camp counselors hit the kids in the face with canoes.
Yeah, it's overrun by rats. But so all those guys are going to have their own parties of like putting them second or third on their own ballots or whatever. But like McDavid's going to be on so many ballots because there's going to be so many fucking writers that are already like, I don't want my ballot public. I don't want the hassle of people coming after me. And now they're looking at every fucking Oilers fan that's been tweeting about McDavid and the Hart, turning their goddamn scopes on these writers and being like, you didn't have him on your ballot. And then being like, this motherfucker doesn't deserve a job.
Yeah, well, guess what? Guess what's going to happen on this podcast when that happens?
I will not put him on my ballot, and I will say, come at me. Yeah. And we will go to Edmonton, and we will have that town meeting that we talked about, the town hall meeting, and everybody can go to the mics and tell me how wrong I am, and I will laugh at them and say I am right.
I meant the opposite. I meant like when I find like all these idiots in Edmonton. You see, one fucking guy was tweeting about how like, oh, apparently everyone thought Milan Lucic was a great signing a year ago, but now they don't want to be.
Oh, and also the fucking Larson trade revision too.
It must be so suffocating to be an Oilers fan in Edmonton when like every person who's like a media person who works for the team essentially in some sort of way or indirect way just constantly parrots what the fucking team tells them.
Yeah.
Oh my god, I would go fucking nuts. Yeah. Watching this team suck ass as Milan Lucic has 2 points in like 30 games. Well, you guys all wanted Milan Lucic. We didn't. And B, even if we did, we're not fucking running the team. The guy who ran the team got Milan Lucic because he thought he could replace Taylor Hall, who's now going to win the MVP 2 years later. What are you doing?
And meanwhile, you know, Oilers
that
fans.
Ballot, I'm going to read on this podcast.
Oilers fans, when they're not fan casting McDavid for the Harder, are then looking at the all-star team that Peter Chiarelli has traded in his career as a GM.
Like, Jesus.
Blake Wheeler. Tyler Seguin, Taylor Hall up front.
Like, how many ex Chiarelli players are going to finish in the top 20 in Hart voting
it's
this
insane.
Year? Like, six?
It's embarrassing as shit.
And just, oh, nope, that's not what we thought Adam Larson was a dude.
Yep.
Oh, God, I hate the sport so much, man. I hate it.
Well, let's change gears then. I have a quick, you were shocked to find out who Jenna Tatum was. Because you didn't know.
Oh, I thought it was. Oh, she took his. Well, it said
Jenna,
Dewan.
Whatever.
Dewan? I don't know. I had no idea who she is.
Channing Tatum's wife. Channing Tatum and his wife split this week, and you were really surprised to find out.
That he was married. I have no idea what's going on.
You also said that you didn't know any famous Jennas, and that was embarrassing for you because people were like, Jameson, Fisher.
Jameson, I should have immediately known. That's on me. But I knew he wasn't married to
Jenna
Jameson.
She was on PornTube, I believe, last time I saw her.
She's actually a spokesperson for my new website, PornTube, where you think it's porn, but it's actually just Jenna Jameson talking about hockey highlights.
I can't look for it right now because I'm on my work computer, but I do want to know. Can you look on your phone and find out if there's a PornTube?
There has to be a PornTube.
He said no. He's laughing at it. Are you going to look on your phone and see if there's a PornTube?
I'll just put PornTube into the Google search bar.
Oh, that's a great way of doing it. Let's see here. What do you got? One word, probably.
Yeah, it has to be one word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
It's called Porn Tube.
It's called Porn Tube, but it has a little registered trademark next to it.
Free and is it, is it, right, is it T-O-O-B, like boob, or is it like tube, like lube?
The next two sites are called DinoTube. I don't know what's going on that site.
We have a certain friend in Massachusetts who might be interested in that site.
And the one below that is called YouJizz.com. What? Well, I need to jizz. Better go to YouJizz.com.
You see, I go to the one under it, which is You May Not Jizz Because of CatholicGuilt.com. Actually, it's .net.
Like, these are ones like Pornhub. That's one I've heard of. Videos, I've heard of that one.
In honor of Channing Tatum and his wife separating, I wanted to ask, you were going to play a little game that Doug Benson plays on his podcast. It's a variation of it. Can you name the five highest grossing Channing Tatum movies adjusted for ticket inflation prices?
Dude, the names of these porn sites are hilarious. Dato porn.
Dato porn.
Like data with an O.
Oh.
Fine tubes.
Fine tube. Refined Downton Abbey porn. Top five Channing Tatum movies, highest grossing. In any order.
In any order.
Just name the five.
So there's Magic Mike.
Okay.
It's Magic Mike XXL.
Okay. Are you having trouble naming five Channing Tatum movies?
I'll say 21 Jump Street, but okay. I don't think it's one of them. Is it?
Well, no. I want you to name your five, and I'll tell you how I did.
Oh, I think you're telling that.
Yeah, I'm sorry to give you all that much encouragement.
Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
White House.
My phone going off. Channing Tatum.
White House Down, and isn't there one where he's like a street fighter and he like fights people for money because he wants to be a dancer or something? Isn't that like half of his movies?
You mean Step Up?
Is it? No. Oh, Step Up's the... No, I don't know. Those are my four. What are the five?
Number five is The Vow.
I have no idea what that
Channing
is.
Channing Tatum in a... I believe it's like a Nicholas Sparks type movie.
Is he a priest? Like
what? No. It's... I think it's like he's blind or she's dead. It's with Rachel McAdams.
Nope. Never heard of it.
Yeah, okay. It's number five.
How much did it make?
$144 million.
What?
Adjusted for inflation.
Wow.
21 Jump Street is four. Mm. Here's one that you probably forgot. G.I. Joe, The Rise of Cobra, in which he played Duke.
Oh, I forgot he was even in that.
Right. When Joseph Gordon-Levitt played Cobra Commander, inexplicably.
But he wore like a mask the whole movie or something,
right? Yeah, and it wasn't even the cool Cobra Commander mask. He didn't even talk like Cobra Commander. I have an incredible weather machine. 22 Jump Street is number two.
Oh, see, I was going to say that. I didn't think the sequel did as well as the first one. But
number one's kind of a trick question because he was the voice of Superman in the Lego movie.
Wait, none of the Magic Mike movies gross
Magic
more than
Mike
140?
One. All right. Was number seven. And Magic Mike XXL was number 14.
Wow, seven.
Seven or 14, yeah.
Well, all right.
All right, question of the week time here on Puck Soup. And it was, assuming they aren't already perfect, which I believe they are, how do you suggest we improve the Stanley Cup playoffs? Sean Leahy, our good friend.
Never heard of him.
Said, puppies.
Colder arenas.
Trail mix on the ice at every face-off.
People said that they like – it was interesting. We asked you guys – I forget if it was in the mailbag or if it was in the main show last week, but we asked you how you felt about guests, which is ironic because we knew that we were going to have a real great guest today. But people said they like when guests sit in for the full show, which I thought was interesting. One, I mean, it's hard because who the fuck wants to be on this fucking dumbass show for 2 hours?
Yeah, like who do I want to talk to for 2 hours?
We've had Leahy in for the full time. We had Lambert in for the full time.
Right.
Did we have Wilder in for the full time or just for a segment?
She was just in and out. Lambert, of course, is ducking us now that he sees his Taylor Hall arguments are falling apart as Taylor Hall continues to have 4 points.
Plus, he doesn't like the fact that now that we've worked through the whole doing an impression of him thing, now he doesn't like the fact that we humor people who want to bring back his other podcast that Sean Gentile doesn't have time to do anymore.
Clearly, it's Lambert who has no time for it.
Do you think it's a Lambert problem? I think it's a Sean problem.
No, I'm doing a bit.
Oh, Sean's a big time columnist now in Pittsburgh.
I don't know why they have time. They have time. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Yins know they don't have time. Yins know when you're a columnist in Pittsburgh, it takes up your entire time.
Well, yeah, that's just one less podcast for us to compete with as far as I'm concerned.
Flower, what do you think about Stick to Sports.com? broadcasting anymore on their podcasts.
We should steal their draft bit, their movie draft bit, and just start, because if they're not using it anymore, we might as well. You know what I mean? It's like a bag of cash sitting on the ground.
Speaking of podcasts, Puck Podcasts answered the question. Glowpuck. No, not that kind. For one game each series, the NHL turns off the lights, turns on powerful black lights, and only the puck, the boards, and the glass, the goalposts, and the relevant markings on the ice are illuminated. The players would wear special jerseys, gear to glow brightly. First of all, I appreciate Puck Podcast participating in our question of the day without trying to start a radio war. I thought this might be a thing. Like, how to improve the playoffs? Fuck Greg and Dave. So we appreciate that all being one big podcast family. Second of all,
get off the drugs, buddy.
Second of all, apparently somebody has gone lunar bowling recently.
Yeah, I know.
It'd be a really cool idea to have that in the playoffs.
Somebody has a good source of mushrooms, apparently, that they want to be able to use at games.
Did you ever go to rock and bowl or lunar bowling when you were a kid?
Oh, God, dozens of times. Like,
oh, yeah.
That was a Friday night, Saturday high school thing.
Yeah, that was a Friday or Saturday night high school thing. Also, a friend of mine, Mark Rusinoff, was the DJ at lunar bowling. So it was called Rock and Bowl in Jersey.
Bowl.
Yeah, Strathmore Lanes. So we used to go there all the time.
If you had the red pin as the head pin and you got a strike, you got a free game. Yeah. You had to call over a bowling alley employee to watch you bowl that particular.
Yeah. Didn't like Rock and Bowl or lunar bowling? People with dandruff. Jared Moore writes, go back to 1-8, 2-7, etc., and eliminate the divisional format. The NHL, quote-unquote, fixed something that wasn't broken and made it worse. Jared is a man of out of my own heart. I appreciate that.
Here's a bad one from Scotty Waz. College style. Already I want to stop reading it, but 4 division champions, 12 at-large bids done through equations.
Equations? Like math?
It gives the regular season some meaning on the strength of schedule, and it adds fancy stats to it. No. It's like the NCAA tournament in college basketball where they have, you know, last 10 strength of schedule, all that. No, that's not a good idea.
Alexander goes away from the seeding and standings debates to suggest something that I think is actually really awesome. Instead of removing bands from the cup, make the trophy bigger. Now, it's an annual ritual, or not annual, but like semi-annual ritual, where they talk about, oh, the names that are leaving the there won't be a mention of Dit Clapper on the cup anymore because the other teams have been added to it. Like, there's this fucking thing. I like this idea. Make the cup just elephantine. Like, make it the size of the Flatiron Building at some point, where it's just like,
might as well.
Just, yeah, and it's like, Sidney Crosby, come get your cup. And then Bettman's like tipping over.
By the way, thanks to everybody that says the fuck it, everyone gets in system is what we should do. I'm glad to see so many people are seeing the light of how to make the regular season and postseason that much more better. Much more better. Is that the term I want to use?
Mike Malley says end it before Memorial Day. But he spelled Memorial Day, Memorial Day, M-E-M. E-R-I-A-L, where it almost looks like mermaid.
Mermaid Day?
Mermaid Memorial Day.
See, I think people just say that now out of reflex. Like, the season should end before a certain date. Like, I mean, no. Like, has there ever been a time where you're like, I want to watch a Stanley Cup final on June 7th, but it's too late for me to put it on, so I'm not going to watch it? You still watch it. You know, like, what does it matter?
I hate.
What are you doing on June 7th that you want that night free?
I feel like part of the problem, though, is that that people don't pay attention to hockey in the middle of June because they want to go to the beach.
Well, there's that aspect to it, yeah.
They're like, I have better.
Basketball ends at the same time, man. Basketball catches up, and they pretty much end the NBA final and the cup final go on at the same time. No one says that about the NBA final.
But look, they're all wearing tank tops and shorts and shit. It looks like summer.
But don't you want to be cooled off in the hot summer days by a nice ice sheet?
I've always, you know, that's an interesting thought. I've often had that thought where it's like, because it's kind of like, when you go watch, if it was the summer of like 1993 and Stallone's Cliffhanger was in theaters in the summer, it's like, who wouldn't want to go see a movie that takes place in the icy mountains?
Right.
Right.
I don't think that matters.
Sure.
Die Hard was a Christmas movie that came out in June.
Did it come out in June?
I think it came out in June. Mm. I may be wrong about that. It's also not a cold movie, but it's summer.
My movie had snow. We fought in the snow. I was wearing a big coat.
You think I'm going out on that ice? Yeah, you got another thing coming. Death Then by Exile.
Impossible.
I love how they shoehorn Cillian Murphy into all three of those movies.
It's great.
It's the key in Hollywood, man, is to become friends with a powerful director, get in one of their movies, and they'll stick you in something forever.
Again, people have such a problem with how Bruce Wayne got from climbing out of the hole back to Gotham.
Just getting out of the hole is stupid.
I have 100% less of a problem with that than how he climbed up on the bridge undetected whilst the military was on the fucking bridges, right, to keep people from passing. Remember that whole thing? Enough gasoline to make a giant bat. And then also make – didn't he also like bring the gasoline down to the ice too? So he's like
this. Light it up. Light it up.
Right, right.
Light it up. Up.
Excuse me, sir. What are you doing up there?
Nothing. Not – painting with the gasoline, I can tell you that.
Yeah, they're on the bridge like, what's that smell? Is there a gas leak in one of the tanks? Like, what is going on?
Quiet. I'm doing my art.
Hey, what are you doing up there, bud?
Washing the bridge. Gasoline. It gets rid of the rust. This city showed you. That this bridge is good. And clean. It's the gasoline. Like Gotham. This gasoline was left over from the Joker. The whole mafia, just one guy in a clown.
Batman had a real bad job of prioritizing in that movie.
While you're in this prison, Gotham will burn.
It'll burn when I get back there and put a giant bat on a bridge.
What?
Nothing.
I'm going to make this jump without a running start, even though every time I've jumped before this, I've come 4 feet short, and I'll live because of fear. What a bad fucking movie that last one was. It was so bad.
How are we supposed to fix your back with that modern?
Just keep punching it. It'll hang upside down.
4 punches and 20 push-ups a day solves any... Yeah, in Black Panther, they have all the technology to fix spinal injuries. In the Dark Knight, it's just like some guy with a rope. Punch me.
How's this possibly going to heal?
Look, I'm no chiropractor, but I think it'll work.
I can get Wi-Fi and a WebMD. It says I should just do push-ups.
A couple more. William Puck follower writes in, Nashville has catfish. Every other team gets something thrown on the ice. Rubber duckies in Anaheim. Syrup in Toronto. Portable chargers in Tampa.
Syrup. Yeah, that's a good idea.
And bags of Coke in L.A. It could also be Vegas. Kelly writes in, improve the spacing on start time so there's always hockey to watch and I don't have to bother with any intermission shows.
Oh, they have to start doing that because they start games at 7 and they start one at 8 and then the 7 and 8, the first and second periods are overlapping every half hour.
It's almost like you could look at what college basketball does and say, hey, just do that, except that'd be way too easy.
I know.
Finally, Patrick O'Sullivan.
Oh, Patrick O'Sullivan.
Oh, a big fan of Beard Oil.
His mother's Mary Potatoes. Wait, is it that Patrick
it's
O'Sullivan?
It's the Patrick O'Sullivan, yeah. Oh, the real...
What's
real...
this suggestion going to be?
Oh, wait. It's the fake Patrick O'Sullivan. Sorry. I got excited. I didn't see a blue checkpoint, and now I put my cursor over it, and I see that he has 123 followers. Well, we'll humor it anyway. The fake Patrick O'Sullivan says, with my wealth of NHL playoff experience, maybe we can get hitting out of the game. Never my thing. You know, now that I think about it, I probably should have been really clued in that this was a fake Patrick O'Sullivan.
I mean, it is a bad take, so it could possibly be the real Patrick O'Sullivan.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to this show. We packed a lot into it.
Yeah.
A Steven Spielberg list, a Channing Tatum quiz, Sedin's awards. We didn't even really talk about the standings because, I mean, by the time you listen to this, I'm sure other teams will be eliminated. Although there's a chance that Blues Avalanche game this weekend could be for a playoff spot, which is kind of exciting.
I guarantee you that it works out somehow where that game means nothing. Oh, we forgot about the Chicago goalie. Our 7-save Patrick Laine stone in goalie off the street who's not going to get paid and going to have his likeness used to sell stuff.
Holy shit. We didn't talk about that last show, did we?
I think that happened like that night after we did last week.
Yeah, no, that was an awesome story. It's the kind of story that can only happen in hockey. I interviewed one of his beer league teammates, and that was one of my favorite things I wrote recently because it was just like – his team was preparing to play, and then someone runs into the dressing room. They're like, hey, what's up? He's going in. And then so their team comes out and the other team comes out and they're waiting for the Zamboni to get done resurfacing the ice. So they're all watching the game on TV in the lobby of the rink. And if you've ever been to any local rink, you know that there's that giant sort of lobby area where kids are walking through and whatever. There's usually like a fucking claw machine there or some shit. So they're all watching the game on the TV there. And then the two teams that played prior to their game come out, and they're watching the game in the lobby. So all these fuckers in these full, in their full kits,
smelling
with
like
skate,
shit,
yeah, skates
probably.
On and whatever,
hockey
are watching their beer league hero play for the Blackhawks. And the other really cool thing was during the game, you could evidently see the TVs from the bar above the rink at Johnny's Ice House. And so the beer league teams are getting ready for a face-off, and one of them glances up and they see skating around, having been named like first star of the game.
Yeah.
And like they stop playing and they just start like tapping their sticks and applauding on the ice during their game to their guy on the TV. It was fucking, what a cool fucking story.
Proves two things. One, the CBA sucks because now players, even though they're not NHL players, will have their likeness and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But two, we got to stop paying goalies money, man. Yeah. Anyone can make a save.
Anyone
in the
can
NHL.
Make a save.
I mean, he stopped lying. Right. It was Stastny he robbed on the, mm-hmm. on the backdoor play. Like, just mm-hmm. give every goalie the same contract. 10 years, $10 million, and then let him play for 10 years.
But I'm like, what other sport does this happen? There's no, like, emergency closer in baseball. There's no, like, emergency quarterback in football.
It's like when a position
The emergency
pitches.
Quarterback in football is, like, the wide receiver who played quarterback for his D3 school.
Yeah, like, Hines Ward is, like, waiting to come in. For,
yeah.
Was it Hines Ward? Was he the emergency guy for Pittsburgh?
Yeah, it's that guy in D3 who's, like, you know, I'm going to grow up to be a quarterback. You're like, but you're a minority player who is really fast. Obviously, you can't be a quarterback.
And then
they make him into a wide receiver or a safety because football fucking sucks.
And then, like, yeah, there's no real – it's like basically like when an outfielder pitches in baseball. That's about it. That's yeah. as close as you can get.
Yeah, but it's never like a fan.
No.
There's no like guy on standby. There's like, hey, listen, man, if the point guard gets hurt in this game – you're going in. We saw you play on the playground once, and you're going in.
Oh, the Yankees let a guy manage the team this year who's never managed in baseball. That's kind of the same thing. They just plucked the guy out of the stands and said, hey, you want to manage the most popular team in baseball for a season because your last name's Boone? Sure.
All right.
What a story.
But again, I think our point is thanks to Stan Fischler for joining us. Stan
yes.
is amazing. And I was super excited we had him on. I think it's going to be one of these moments where he'll look back on it and be like, I don't know what happened that day, but it was surreal that I did anything. I was in a studio talking to two idiots for half an hour.
Yeah, he'll forget about this the moment he walks
yeah,
out.
Yeah, the moment he walks out. My favorite thing about interviewing Stan was the fact that no matter what we asked him, he just told a story.
He just told a story. That's what I want. I just want stories.
It's the best.
I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear his thoughts on Corsi and,
yeah.
and Fenwick.
It's Stan, just... what do you think about the development of defensive centermen over the years, going from the early days of Guy Carbonneau to now with Patrice Bergeron?
There was a play in 1937. His name was Boom Boom Reginald Blackjack Water Fountain Spritzer. They called him that because he spit water all over the place.
Stan, what do you think about the development of a puck movie defenseman through the years? I mean, we had Paul Coffey in the 80s, but now we've moved all the way up to players like Eric Carlson.
In 1943, there was once a trade involving a hamburger.
There was a kid named Tiger Lionson. He was actually half tiger, half lion. It was Clarence Campbell genetically engineered him in the basement of MSG. Not the current MSG, the old MSG. And he skated on all fours. Should have been in the Hall of Fame.
Stan, your thoughts on the... developments in labor negotiations through the years in the current CBA.
In the Western Hockey League, there was once a fight in which a man took out a curved Arabian sword and he fought the other guy who, for some reason, had a flamethrower. But not like a modern flamethrower, like the first generation of flamethrower where you had to use, you know, an aerosol can and a lighter.
And one of his teammates, his teammate's name was Milk Carton O'Reilly. Because he always went missing on road trips because he was in bed with the ladies. So Milk Carton takes a lasso and lassos this kid as he's skating over with the flamethrower. Oh, it was a great game back then in the WHL.
His name was Dirt Pile Robinson because he was buried in the minor leagues, you see.
All right, that's the show for this week. We've probably gone over 2 hours now, and thanks for Stan for coming on. We love him.
People here have work to do.
We'll see you next week for the playoff preview. Bye.
Today's episode of Puck Soup has been sponsored by Just for Men. For an enviable beard and healthy feeling skin underneath, opt for beard care from Just for Men, the number one beard experts. Soften up, smooth out, and beard on. Kiss your average beard goodbye and usher in your softest, smoothest, and bestest beard and skin underneath with Just for Men face and beard wash, beard conditioner, beard oil, and beard balm, all of which were made with soothing oatmeal, aloe, chamomile, and jojoba oil. Put your best beard forward. Visit jfmbestbeard.com and use the promo code BESTBEARD25 to get 25% off your purchase. That's jfmbestbeard.com and use promo code BESTBEARD25 to get 25% off your purchase.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.